His confounder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Kochi Vaishnavrind ki jai, Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivrind ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shai Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mathura Dham Ki Jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the electronically assembled devotees. All glories to the electronically assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Bhutame. Srimate Bhakti Vinata Swami Nityananda. Sai Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pachana. If you have a physical Bhagavatams handy, I suggest that you get out Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text 32. That's Canto 3, Chapter 26, Verse 32. I also suggest that you get out Canto 11, Chapter 12, Text 17 and 18. That's Canto 11, Chapter 12, Text 17 and 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om
Vasudevaya.
So this particular class is really Bhaktivedanta Maharaj's class, not my class. It was part of a series of five seminars of about 2 to 2.5 hours each that he gave in Bangladesh about 5, 6 years ago. And I asked him if I could have his permission to take his notes and go to the seminar himself. So this is a greatly shortened form to do this in 1 hour. You're really just getting some of the essence of the essence of it. It can expand much further than this. So this seminar is about attentive chanting, but attentive chanting from a very different vision. It's giving the scientific basis of why attentive chanting is, we're getting some static on the line, Amananda, why attentive chanting is the key to coming from our material existence to our spiritual existence, and also the scientific basis of how to chant attentively. So it both gives us the why and it gives us the how. So we're going to start with the analogy of traveling somewhere. And you can think of this with maps. Like if you go on the internet, you can get Google Maps. And after you've plotted where you are and where you want to go, then you can click a button for reverse directions. And it will give you the opposite direction. Your right turns become left turns. You can also think of this in terms of a GPS, that you can program a GPS to go someplace. Then after you reach your destination, you can either just hit a button that says home, or you can verbally say home, and your GPS will reverse your directions. So that's going to be the principle here. We're going to see how we have become entangled in the material world, and then how through properly done attentive chanting, we can reverse directions to go home. So we're going to start by looking at Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 26, text 32. Tamasak cha vikurvanat bhagavad virya choditat shabda matram abhutasman naba srotam dusabdagam. When egoism and ignorance is agitated by the sex energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the subtle element of sound is manifested, and from sound come the ethereal sky and the sense of hearing. So we're not going to read the entire purport. We're going to read a section from the first paragraph. We're going to read a section from the second paragraph. In the first paragraph, it is stated also in the Vedanta Sutra that sound is the origin of material possession, and that by sound one can also dissolve this material existence. Anavritti Shabdat means liberation by sound. The entire material manifestation began from sound, and sound can also end material entanglement if it has a particular potency. The particular sound capable of doing this is the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna. Our entanglement in material affairs has begun from material sound. Now we must purify that sound in spiritual understanding. So here we see Srila Prabhupada talking about two related things. If you have the purport in front of you, again, this is 3:26:32, you can see that Srila Prabhupada says, the entire material manifestation began from sound, and sound can also end material entanglement. So here, generally I do this as an interactive workshop, but what we can see from here is that Srila Prabhupada is talking about the whole cosmos. And we'll see that in the second paragraph, that the whole material creation was started from sound. And if you look at the verse itself, egoism and ignorance create sound. The first line in the purport, it appears in this verse that all the objects of our sense gratification are the products of egoism and ignorance. So everything gross and subtle within this world was produced by sound. And sound can reverse the gross manifestation. Then Prabhupada's second point here, he says, our entanglement. So here Srila Prabhupada is not speaking about the whole material creation, but about us personally. Our entanglement in material affairs has begun from material sound. Now we must purify that sound in spiritual understanding. So please hold on to those two conceptions. The whole material universe was created by sound, and a particular sound can reverse it back to its spiritual origin. And my own entanglement in this material world began from sound, and it can be reversed also from sound. Well, let's go to the second paragraph. Here Srila Prabhupada is going to speak about the whole material creation. He says, from sound the ether became manifested, and that the air became manifested from ether. How the ethereal sky comes from sound, how the air comes from sky, and how fire comes from air will be explained later on. Sound is the cause of the sky, and sky is the cause of the stroking the ear. So the progression is, first there's sound. Actually, first there's time and egoism and ignorance. Time is Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva is a manifestation of egoism and ignorance. When this is agitated by Krishna's potency from his virya, which Prabhupada translates as from his sex energy is creative energy. From our sexual energy, we produced children. So from Krishna's energy produces sound. Sound produces sky or space. I was just reading in the Chaitanya Charitamrita how in the material world, all of our conceptions of Krishna are covered by space, time, and thought. So what we think of space as, there has to be space. But actually material space is created by sound. Just like we hear in the spiritual world, 1 + 1 = 1. 1 - 1 = 1. So that's impossible to us with our conception of space. So sound creates space or ether. From that is created touch. From that is created air or gases, material elements in the form of gases. From that is created form. From that is created fire or radiant energy. From that is created taste. From that is created water. Without water, there's no taste. If you ever try drying off your tongue and putting sugar and salt and whatever, you can't taste it. From that comes smell, and from that comes earth or solid objects. So here we have solid objects, liquid objects, gaseous objects, radiant energy, and the space in which all these interact. And all these are produced from sound. Now, according to modern science, even the solid objects in our world are all moving. They're all made up of moving atoms. And we know that in order for there to be sound, there has to be movement. And whenever there is movement, there is sound. Of course, we all know what that original sound was. The original sound was Omkara, the pranava. Okay. Now, how does the how if we turn to 11, 12, 17? Here, Krishna has just been explaining to Uddhava all different processes of yoga, and Uddhava is totally bewildered.
Just like, what do I do? Okay, you've told me this kind of yoga, that kind of yoga, this kind of yoga, that kind of yoga. Then Krishna says, I'm going to read just part of this verse. The Supreme Lord gives life to every living being and is situated within the heart along with the life air and primal sound vibration. The Supreme Lord also assumes a gross form as the various sounds of the Vedas, composed of short and long vowels and consonants of different intonations. So now, okay, if I had asked Krishna a question, all right, you just explained 10 kinds of yoga to me. What should I follow? And this was his answer. You'd probably say, huh? Huh? You know, what's that all about? So let's take a look in this purport. Here we read, second sentence. Uddhava was bewildered and doubtful because Lord Krishna explained many different processes, such as devotional service, speculative knowledge, renunciation, mystic yoga, austerities, pious duties, and so on. And here Krishna is saying the essence of all of these is that he exists in sound. Let's go to the second paragraph. And we see here, we talked already about the big gross creation, the gross creation of space, solids, liquids, gases, and radiant energy. Now we're going to look at the secondary creation, that of Lord Brahma. So looking at the second paragraph, here it says, Lord Krishna became manifest from the mouth of Brahma in the form of the Vedas. The word Vivara Prasuti in this verse also indicates that the Lord is manifest within the Adharadi chakras situated within the body of Lord Brahma. The word Goshena means subtle sound, and Guhyam Pravishta also indicates that Lord Krishna enters within the Adhara chakra. The Lord can further be perceived within the other chakras, such as the Manipuraka chakra, located around the navel, and the Vishuddhi chakra. So, here what we read about is that the Lord enters the Mula Chakra of Lord Brahma, which is also called the cave. And according to the commentary of Vishnu Chakravati Thakur on this verse, he says that prana, or air, impregnated with nada, impregnated with sound, enters the Muladhara Chakra of Lord Brahma, the cave. The Muladhara Chakra is the very bottom chakra. The Mula means root. Then he enters the Manipura chakra, just below the navel, and then he enters the Vasudhi chakra, the root of the palate, and comes out of the mouth of Lord Brahma as the different sounds of the Vedas. The Vishnu Purana 1564 says, with these sounds, Brahma then creates the cosmos. By reciting the words of the Vedas in the beginning, Lord Brahma created the names and forms of the material elements, the rituals, the devas, and all other living entities. So that these sounds, originally Lord Brahma spoke sounds. Hold on one minute. Lord Brahma spoke these sounds, and these sounds manifested as actual objects. They manifested as material elements. They manifested as the demigods. When Lord Brahma said sounds, those sounds took particular form. Now let's see how the Lord is going through the different chakras of Lord Brahma as different types of sound. So as the Lord in the form of sound moves up through Brahma's chakras, from the Muladhara chakra to coming out of the mouth of Lord Brahma, so the nature of the sound or the name of the sound somewhat changes. This is also explained in a story in the Vedas of Indra, who was when he was trying to kill after he killed, actually, the demon Vritrasura. After he killed the demon Vritrasura, he was offered some somaras, but some of the other demigods took a part of it, and therefore Indra cursed them that they would only be manifested in gross sound. So the first three kinds of sound are not manifested on the gross platform. The first kind of sound, Paravak, is existing in the Mula Chakra. Para, of course, means transcendental or spiritual. Then Pasyantivak is in the Manipur Chakra, just below the navel.
The Shuddhi chakra, or the root of the palate, is the Madhyama Vak, the middle Vak, and the sound that comes out of our mouth is the Vaikari Vak. So this Parva Vak is spiritual sound. Pasyanti Vak deals with the intelligence. The word Pasyanti means to see. Madhyama means middle. This is at the Vishuddhi chakra. This Madhyama Vak, this middle voice, is the voice of the mind. And Vaikari Vak is the voice of gross sounds. Okay, we're going to just look at text 18 of Canto 11, chapter 12. And we'll come back to this later, but I want to read it now, because Krishna is going on and explaining how he's manifesting sound. He says, when sticks of kindling wood are vigorously rubbed together, heat is produced by contact with air, and a spark of fire appears. Once the fire is kindled, ghee is added, and the fire blazes. Similarly, I become manifest in the sound vibration of the Vedas. So here Krishna is giving another analogy. Instead of moving up from Paravak, Pasantivak, Majumavak, and Vaikarivak, he's giving the example of friction, spark, ghee, and fire. Right, so just as Krishna goes through the chakras of Lord Brahma with different levels of sound, which go from originally spiritual sound to the gross manifestation. So as Prabhupada said in the third canto, we have each created our own entanglement through sound. We are each like little Brahmas, just like Brahma creates the universe. Right, the sound comes out of his mouth. He creates everything. He looks around and says, cool. Look at this universe I've created. So we do the same thing. Our first sound is that of Paravak. We are first spiritual beings. And we express a desire to be the enjoyer, to be the Lord. I want to be the enjoyer. And because as spiritual beings, we are in a world where desires are fulfilled. That is a very powerful sound. Those desires then take a specific form, a vision, a picture, on the level of Pasyanti Vak. Pasyanti Vak is the energy of desire. So Paravak is transcendent energy. Pasyanti Vak is the energy of desire, Ichha Shakti. This is the level of intelligence. Just like even materially, the intelligence says, I want to be a doctor. It gets some vision. Where if you're starting a business, the first thing you have to have, what's the first thing you have to have? Everyone think about it right now. A lot of people say money. Some people say an office. First thing you have to have is a vision. First thing you have to have is some goal, some vision. I just finished a book on how to institute change. It said one of the ways is to get people to see a vision of the final goal. So that's Pasyanti Vak, the voice of vision. Then detailed plans are decided on the level of Madhyama Vak. Here we have Gyan Shakti. So I get a vision of how I want to be the enjoyer. And then I collect knowledge with the mind. And the mind makes plans. I'm going to be the enjoyer this way. I'm going to be the enjoyer this way. I'm going to be the enjoyer this way. If I have a vision that I want to be a doctor, then I make plans. I'm going to go to Harvard Medical School. I'm going to study hard and so forth. Then it comes to gross speaking on the level of Vaikari Vak. Here there's creative energy, Kriya Shakti. Prabhupada at least one time, asked the devotees, how does anything happen? Said first by talking about it. So we talk about it. And then from that talking, things manifest on the gross platform. Things manifest on the gross platform. So that is how we have come here. We have come here by first having a voice on the Paravak platform. I want to be the enjoyer. But that kind of vibration generates material layers of covering. The vibration of the soul, I want to be enjoyed. I want to give enjoyment to Krishna, Rishikesha, Rishikena Sevanam. That kind of voice generates his spiritual body and rasa. The voice of I want to be at the center. Yet it's powerful. Just like Krishna's sound creates the whole material universe, our sound creates our little universe. Our sound creates our little bodies. Our sound creates our little karma. Our sound creates our little world. We become like a little Brahma, creating our little world. So from subtle to gross, from the spiritual Paravak to the intelligence, the vision of Pasyantivak, to the mind of Majjhimavak, to the gross body of Vaikarivak. So that's how we got here. Now we are going to reverse the process. Now we say, okay, I want to go home. We push the button for reverse directions. So looking at this Bhagavatam verse 18 that we read about fire and wood, and also referring to the Shvetasvara Upanishad 1:14, we see that first we take up chanting, spiritual, the original Paravak of the soul. What is the Paravak of the soul? In spiritual, it is, I want Krishna to be the enjoyer. And how does Krishna be the enjoyer? With Radha, his pleasure energy. Hare Krishna. Or even the sound Om. Jiva Goswami says the sound Om, which is Aum. Is Ah is Krishna. U is Radha. M is me, the living entity. When I say Aum, Om, I am saying I wish to bring together Radha and Krishna. When I chant Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, because it's in the vocative, Hey Krishna, Hey Rama, I am included. And as soon as I say Hare Krishna, Radha and Krishna are together. That is the original voice of the soul. So I take this original voice of the soul that generates the spiritual body, that generates rasa, and I first say it on the level of Vaikarivak. I first say it on the level of my gross body. This is like gross acts of sacrifice, like you're rubbing wood together. Right? And when you're rubbing wood together, what are you doing? You're sweating. It's hard. Right? You're rubbing, 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 rubbing. At first, all that is produced is smoke. Gradually, with repeated practice, the chanting goes from the level of Vaikarivak to the level of Majjhimavak, the knowledge energy. On this level, from rubbing the wood, a spark of knowledge comes. Jnana Dipena. So just when you're rubbing the wood, when you're chanting only on the level of Vaikarivak, when you're chanting only with the mouth, then there's just smoke. When you start chanting on the mouth and the mind, then there's a spark of knowledge. Spiritual knowledge starts to awaken. One starts to be chanting on the clearing platform. After chanting on the clearing platform, a fire starts to be kindled from the spark. Then one starts to chant on the level of Pasyantivak. And this eagerness, this is where eagerness that Rupa Goswami speaks of, the energy of desire, Ichha Shakti, awakens. This is what Krishna speaks about in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where he says that by performing Abhyas Yoga or practice yoga, you will develop Ichha, you will develop a desire for Krishna. Prabhupada says clearly in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, everything is based on desire. The way to rekindle our spiritual identity and go back to Godhead is only, solely, absolutely, completely, totally desire. And that is all. When chanting is happening at the level of Pasyantivak, desire awakens. At this point, one is pouring ghee
on the spark that came from chanting at the level of Majjhima Vak. At this point, one starts to understand the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, and something a little of the leelas of Krishna. At this point, one's spiritual body starts to awaken. One has some sense of who I am. What is my relationship with Krishna? But this is still on the material level. As one is chanting on the level of Pasyanti Vak, the inner desires of the soul become purified. Here, the fire is blazing and Krishna becomes manifest. When Krishna becomes manifest, all the wood is burned. The wood that when used to start the fire has now been consumed by that very fire. What was the wood? The gross body and the subtle body. At this point, one enters into Leela. Referring to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, Text 26, that upon becoming fixed in his attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by the grace of the spiritual master and by awakening knowledge and detachment, the living entity situated in the heart of the body and covered by the five elements burns up his material surroundings, exactly as fire, arising from wood, burns the wood itself. All right, so how to do this very specifically? First, we're chanting on the level of the mind, of the mouth, on the level of Vaikari Vak. A beginner is by definition, is chanting just on the level of Vaikari Vak. So the mouth is going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And the mind is going, what am I going to do today? Oh, I have to place an order for that. I have an appointment at 2 o'clock. I've got to remember that I have to do this. Oh, this person said this really nasty thing to me yesterday. How am I going to do with this? Oh, my kid's really sick. I might have to take her to the doctor. Oh, I don't have enough money, and I don't know how I'm going to pay my debts. Maybe I'm going to have to default on my credit card or anything like that. The mind is going all over the place. The Majjhima Vak is not in sync. And the Pasyanti Vak on the level of desires, the vision, the pictures that are happening within our intelligence are all of material things. How I'm going to be the enjoyer. I'm going to be the enjoyer by becoming a great devotee or a great saintly person. Or I'm going to become the enjoyer by doing this or doing that. Or I'm going to become the enjoyer by attracting that pretty Ramacharini on the other side of the room or whatever. Maybe. So that's on the level of desire. And of course, on the level of Paravak, the soul is simply as a witness feeling, I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy. So at this level, when we're chanting on Vaikari Vak, what we need to start switching things is a mood of detachment. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita chapter 15. We're in this banyan tree, and how does one cut it down? One cannot untangle a banyan tree. For those of you who've physically seen a banyan tree, there's a lot of them here on Hawaii. If you find a really big banyan tree, you can't discover what is the original root. You just can't. You can't untangle it. Just like people go to therapy to try to untangle their problems, their mental and emotional problems in this life. They go to a hypnotist to try to untangle their problems from previous lives. But you know, you never fully untangle them. Never fully untangle them. You know, you may get closure on one problem you had with one person, but in the meantime, you'll be creating new problems with new people or new problems with the old people, and it never really gets solved. It's like when you have a roll of tape where you can't find the beginning. You ever had a roll of tape like that? It got stuck to itself. You can't find where it begins, and you try and you peel off part of the tape, but another part of the tape doesn't peel, and then you have one layer of tape here and three layers of tape there, or you know, a ball of string. The example I like to give is that of the Gordian knot. So there was a Gordian knot in the Middle East, and the legend was that whoever could untie that knot could conquer the world. So Alexander the Great came and tried to untie the knot, And finally he took his sword and he cut the Gordian knot. So in the same way one must cut with detachment. So first thing is detachment. The mind is going blah, 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 blah. The intelligence is going blah, 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 blah. Just detach. Detach. Prabhupada says to ignore the mind. So any of you who ever raised children, so when children are very small, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, so if they don't get what they want, they have a fit. I want butter! I want the green spoon! Now, I want to sit in that place in the van! And they're screaming and they're yelling, and they can be very insistent. One of my grandchildren here who's 9, when she wants something, she just doesn't give up. I want it, 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 I want it. And what do? We ignore her. We say, sorry, you're not getting that. And then we ignore her. We take the screaming child and put them in their room and say, you have to stay in your room until you can stop screaming. So this way one should ignore the mind. As Bhakti Sinatra Saraswati said, you beat it with brooms and shoes, broomsticks and shoes. As ignore it. The Bhagavatam says, just like you don't trust some wild animal you've captured, you don't trust the mind. So detachment. Detachment. How do we get this mood of detachment? We get this mood from the spiritual strength of Lord Balaram. If we look at Bhagavad Gita 7:11, where Krishna says, Balam Balavatam Chaham Kama Raga Vivarjitam. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada translates this as, I am the strength of the strong devoid of passion and desire. But in other places, Srila Prabhupada talks about this, that this is spiritual strength, that spiritual strength doesn't have kama or raga in it. So we want this spiritual strength that comes from Balaram, and of course Balaram appears to us in the form of Guru. When we say you must have the mercy of Lord Nityananda, you must have the mercy of Balaram, what we mean by that, among other things, is not all that we mean by that, but what we mean by that is one must surrender to Guru. And Guru teaches us detachment in the Guru's instructions of philosophy, in the Guru's instructions of practical life. In this way, we get strength that's devoid of passion and devoid of material desire. And just like when rubbing wood, there has to be repeated practice. So it's difficult. It is difficult. Prabhupada said, until we become fixed, it is a hard struggle with determination. So to chant, to bring my chanting from the level of Vaikari Vak to Majjhima Vak is a difficult thing. There has to be repeated practice, repeated practice, repeated practice. And at first, my practice is only going to produce smoke. So at first, my chanting, if I try to chant with my mind, which we also call hearing, my chanting, it's another way of putting it, then first all I'm going to notice is how attached I am, how fallen I am, all of my problems, they will become revealed to me. We should mention here that if we expose ourselves to mundane sound, then it's like pouring water on our wood, and it will make the process take much longer. Also, exposure to mundane sound starts the whole process of entanglement all over again. Now, if on the level of Vaikari Vak, when I'm chanting with my mouth, if I'm not making any effort whatsoever to move to chanting at Majjhima Vak, to move to chanting with my mind, then I'm going to have some problems. These are listed by Jiva Goswami, and unfortunately I don't have the reference here. He says they will lead to 4 problems. And we have seen practically, unfortunately, we have to practically cry to say this, but we have seen that people who join the Hare Krishna movement and do not make an effort to advance, but are satisfied chanting on the level of Vaikari Vak, actually develop these 4 things. We've seen it practically in others, and we may also have seen it practically in ourselves. Now, it takes repeated practice. If one becomes lazy, if one says, I'm just going to chant with my mouth and let my mind run all over the universe, I'm not going to make any effort to also chant with my mind, I'm not going to make an effort to chant with my desires. My dear friends, we will not be fully successful, but if we make an effort, Krishna will help us. If we don't make an effort, we actually will run into problems. These are the four problems mentioned by Jiva Goswami. Crookedness, faithlessness, attachment to things that destroy faith in Krishna. Oh, actually, it's five things, sorry.
Slackness in the process, and pride in devotional advancement and accomplishment.
So crookedness, one will start becoming devious. One won't be honest anymore. One will lose one's sense of ethics. Faithlessness, one will think, oh, this process doesn't work. Attachment to things that destroy faith in Krishna, because we cannot live without attachment. We cannot live without pleasure. If we're not trying to bring our chanting to the stage of attachment and pleasure, we'll become attached to things that hurt us. Slackness in the process. We'll become lazy. We won't even maybe finish our rounds, right? Or we'll make an offering in some sloppy way. We'll be sloppy about what kind of food we buy. We'll be careless about how we treat the devotees. There'll be some carelessness. And pride in devotional advancement and accomplishments. So I remember once visiting a temple. I'd never been there before. And when I came to the temple, this one brahmachari comes up to me and says, I am so-and-so, I am the temple commander, and I've done this service and that service. He started listing his resume to me, and I'm thinking, why is he doing this? And then he says to me, so what department are you in? So I didn't know what to say. I said, oh, well, I'm in the troublemaking department. But I was wondering, why is he listing his resume to me? And we see this. We see that devotees who don't try to bring their chanting to the deeper levels of sound, that they become very proud of what they've done. You know, I've built this temple. I've distributed this many books. I've offered this much archi. And they think that that is their advancement in Krishna consciousness. Huh?
So we should make an effort. As we're chanting with our mouth, we make an effort to also chant with our mind. We make an effort to chant with our mind. That can mean just hearing the name. Burijan Prabhu suggests that we try to do that one mantra, then another mantra. Not even saying one mantra at a time. But I'm going to hear this mantra. Now I'm going to hear this mantra. Now I'm going to hear this mantra. Hearing the mantra means that you're chanting with your mouth and you're chanting with your mind. So just like all of us right now, we can chant the mantra silently in our mind without making a sound, right? Hare Krishna.
So we could just chant the mantra in our mind. So chanting at Madhyama Vak means like that. Chanting at Madhyama Vak also means chanting with the mind, the things that we talked about last Saturday. So, like the quotes we read from Prabhupada, where he says, while chanting, we can see the deity in the mind. He said, just like you've seen the deity, what is the difficulty to remember the deity while chanting? That is also a way of chanting with the mind
while we are chanting with the mouth.
Another way of chanting with the mind while you are chanting with the mouth is what Prabhupada explained in Switzerland,
where one is getting a picture of making a diamond throne for Krishna, bathing him with Ganga and Jamuna water, dressing him, and worshipping him. So where the mind is engaged along with the mouth. Those are all ways of chanting on the level of Madhyama Vak. So chanting on Madhyama Vak means that as I say the words with my mouth, I am focusing on those words with my mind. Or it means that the mantra is going in the voice of the mind along with the voice of the mouth. Or it can mean, as the mantra is going with the mouth, within my mind I am seeing the form of the deity. Or it can mean that within my mind I am rendering service to the Lord, or I'm rendering service to the deity. So that may mean, you know, I'm imagining myself going to the Jamuna and getting water and bathing the deity. If one is doing it properly, one will hear the mantra better. So those are different ways of chanting on the that Srila Prabhupada explains and that's given in the Bhagavatam for chanting on the level of mouth and mind. Then one wants to gradually add to that chanting on the level of Pasyanti Vak,
on the level of desire. This is where we're getting to actual attachment to Krishna. I should say that to move from any of these levels, to move from Vaikarivak to Majjhimavak, from Majjhimavak to Pasyantivak, requires the mercy of Guru and Krishna. This is not something that we do by our own strength. We are not mystic yogis who are trying to become liberated by our own strength. We are bhakti yogis who are trying to attain pure devotional service by the grace and the kindness and the compassion of Lord Shri Krishna and Radharani, of Krishna as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But to invoke their compassion, we have to engage in an endeavor. We have to do something like Mother Yasoda tying up Krishna. So please do not think that we are talking about a mechanical process, and yet we are talking about doing certain mechanics. So to move from the level from Majjhimavak up to Pasyantivak means that one's level of meditation on Majjhimavak is very solid. That one is able to fix one's mind on the sound of the mantra, the form of the deity, service to the deity, with little or no deviation of the mind. So at first, when one's practicing chanting on the level of Majjhimavak, the mind will keep running away like a naughty child, like a wild animal, right? We have children in this house who are sometimes naughty. We ask them to sit down for dinner, and they run away, and then we have to bring them back, and then they run away, and we have to bring them back, and they run away, and we have to bring them back. But eventually, once they start eating, they usually stay. They usually want to finish their meal once they start eating. So at first, when you try to go from Vaikarivak to Majjhimavak, the mind will run away, run away. You will fail. My dear friends, you will fail. Don't give up by that failure. When we're rubbing the wood, rubbing the wood, rubbing the wood, rubbing the wood, we just sweat and we get tired and there's just smoke and we feel like a failure and we want to give up. Don't give up. Keep doing it. You may have to do this every day, every japa time, every kirtan time for a year or two. One sannyasi I know told me that when he was a new devotee, that if he didn't hear each mantra, if he didn't chant each mantra with attention, he would re-chant that bead. I got scared when I heard that. But that's the kind of determination that one has to have. I know of different devotees have told me different ways that they engage in Majjhimavak chanting. I know of devotees who go to Srila Prabhupada's, mentally go to Srila Prabhupada's room in Vrindavan. Some of them go mentally to Srila Prabhupada's room in Radha Damodar Temple. Then they may go to Mayapur, they may go to different places in Mayapur, to Vrindavan, or to different temples. I know one devotee who mentally makes a huge garland of lotus flowers and then walks around Govardhan Hill in her mind, putting the garland of lotus flowers around Govardhan Hill. I know devotees who just say, I'm going to hear this mantra, I'm going to hear this mantra, I'm going to hear this mantra. And you may do different things at different times, but some attempt and some determination. I am going to chant at the level of Majjhimavak. I am not going to stay on the level of Vaikarivak. Of Majjhimavak, it will naturally produce a spark. Then what do you do with that spark? My dear friends, if you chant on the level of Majjhimavak, Pasyantivak will awaken. It will awaken. Krishna will start to manifest to you. What do? You let him in. I've spoken to so many devotees who had made an effort to chant on the level of Majjhimavak. Then Krishna reciprocated with them, and they got scared, were afraid they were becoming a sahajiya, and ran away. So please don't do this. If we're meditating on Krishna, we will attract Krishna. When we attract Krishna, we'll get some feeling. We'll get some feeling for Krishna. We'll start feeling, oh, Krishna is my beloved son, or Krishna is my lover, or Krishna is my friend, or Krishna is my master. We'll actually get those feelings. Chanting at the level of Pasyantivak is the level of Icha. It's the level of desire. That cannot be imitated, it cannot be done artificially, but it will happen naturally when one is chanting at the level of Majjhimavak. Prasyantivak will awaken by the grace of Krishna, by the grace of Guru. Then one wants to pour ghee on that fire. One wants to chant with a mood of desire. As one chants with a mood of desire, then eventually the soul will start to awaken. So I'd like everybody to unmute themselves, please, because we're going to do a little exercise together here. So please unmute your microphones and get back on. Sorry that if you can hear the baby crying. I'm trying to cover my mic as far as I can.
I've left everybody on free conferencing unmuted, so you don't have to worry.
Okay. So what we're going to do now is a little exercise. And we're going to start with, interestingly enough, the level of Pasyantivak. Then we're going to add Majumivak. Then we're going to add Vaikarivak. So Pasyantivak, remember, is the level of desire. It's the level of vision. It's the Ichisha. So I'd like each of us to go back to a time when we really had a desire to love and serve Krishna. Maybe it was a half an hour ago. Maybe it was yesterday. Maybe it was 10 years ago. Sometime when we really felt, I really want to love Krishna. I really want to serve Krishna. I really want to be a devotee of Krishna. And go back to that time so you're re-experiencing it. Not just remembering it, but re-experiencing it. So you can feel again in your body that feeling, I really want to love Krishna.
Hey, I'm giving a class here. Can you move a screaming baby to another part of the house, please?
So holding on to that feeling, hold on to that feeling. Now, if you've never experienced that, then go to a time when you felt very detached. Some time when you felt, I really don't like materialistic life. I don't like exploitation. I don't like cheating. I don't like sense gratification.
Yeah.
I'm tired. I'm just done with it. And go back to re-experience such a time and hold that feeling. If you've never had either of those feelings, if you've never felt I really want to love Krishna or I'm done with material life, then go to a time when you had some curiosity. I wonder what the world is all about. I wonder who God is. I wonder who I am. Some intense curiosity and hold that feeling. Now holding that feeling, we're going to chant three mantras in our mind. Complete silence. If you have the mantra written down in front of you, you can look at the words that way. You should be screaming the mantra in your mind so that no other sound and no other thought can intrude. So holding that feeling, we're going to say the mantra in our mind three times silently, starting now. Okay, now holding that feeling, that desire, and continuing to chant in the mind, we're now going to chant with our mouth as well. So we'll be chanting on three levels, desire, mind, and mouth. We'll go through the mantra again three times. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna,
Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Rama Rama, Rama Rama,
Hare Hare. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare.
Questions, comments?
Actually, you reminded me of something that Srila Shrimarsh once told us, that if you can remember what your initial attraction to Krishna was, what brought you to Krishna consciousness, you can carry that, take that thread all the way back to Godhead.
Beautiful.
When you asked us to think about a time when we really were at, you know, at the feet of Krishna, wanting to be Krishna conscious, I have to say my latest one was when I was in front of Govindaji in Jaipur, because all the devotees there, the local devotees, were so full of love of Krishna. I was, you could feel it so strongly that you just wanted to be like, feel what they're feeling. You wanted to be really Krishna conscious naturally like they were.
Yes. Very nice. Thank you.
And a feeling of being disgusted with this material world. It's every day I leave work, I am disgusted with this material world.
So that, those are things you can... better than discuss with the material world is a feeling of wanting to love Krishna. That if you can, if you've had any experience like that that you can hold on to, that is the best to hold on to, especially while you're chanting.
And in regards to chanting with the mind, I just had an experience. I was just telling Mother Kandita this last night. I had a, I think I had like a out of body spirit here while Vidugda was gone visiting me. And I was telling Mother Kandita that what I did was I had a 24-hour kirtan from Vrindavan, and I just kept it going on one of my CD players, a small one, in my room while I was sleeping. And I noticed that because I had the kirtan on, as I fell asleep, I dreamt of kirtan. And when, as I woke up at night to use the bathroom, I was chanting in my mind, and I had it on going for 3 days, and finally the spirit. But I really made a note of that in my mind, that what effect it had of having a kirtan going on, and I was just chanting all the time in my mind like that, you know, because of the kirtan.
Wonderful.
Mother Imla, I have two questions.
Yes.
The exercise that you just put us through, I thought was very effective. I was especially amazed at chanting within the mind. In situations, as we often are, around, especially like non-devotees, we try and chant under our breath. One thing is they kind of see us murmuring something. It looks strange, you know.
Right.
Do a second look at it. Would it be more effective to not even try to murmur, but to simply chant in the mind, if you're in a situation where you're in public and it's just not appropriate?
Well, basically, we should always be chanting with our mind. However, chanting with our mouth also is much more kirtan, and it benefits the living entities around us. Obviously, we may be in some situations where that's not possible. But Srila Prabhupada, there's one purport where he said that the lips and the tongue should be moving.
Okay.
And Prabhupada definitely preferred japa that was more audible. And of course, kirtan has to be audible or it's not kirtan. So... definitely we should be chanting at the level of the mind. If we stay only chanting at the level of the mouth and we don't make an effort to also chant on the level of mind and intelligence, we're going to end up in trouble. It's okay in the beginning, but if we stay at the beginning platform intentionally, we're going to end up in trouble. So you definitely want to chant on the level of mind. Do not at all chant on the gross platform. It's not what Srila Prabhupada's recommending. Although it is a fact that if you're fully chanting on the level of mind and intelligence, you may enter into a state of samadhi where your audible sound becomes much less. And we find that Srila Prabhupada sometimes was chanting japa so that it was barely audible. Hari Sari reports that, you know, he'd go into Prabhupada's room and Prabhupada would be in deep state of trance and he'd be chanting japa, but it was practically inaudible on an external level. But that should be more a result of deep trance. But we should always be chanting in the mind. Should always be meditating. Man mana bhava mad bhakta. Always think of Krishna. Always remember Krishna. Never forget him. That doesn't mean we're going to be standing in the supermarket line having a loud kirtan or chanting japa loudly. No, that wouldn't be very good for our preaching.
I have a question. After I chant 16 rounds of my beads, sometimes I like to chant without the beads, and sometimes it seems that I could chant better rounds without the beads, chanting loudly and in the mind.
Well, beads are not the only traditional way to chant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would also chant on his fingers. And sometimes he'd use a knotted rope. Gaurakishore Das Babaji also used a knotted rope. So certainly beads are not the only way. What's nice about beads is that you're in touch with Tulsi Devi. And chanting in the association of Tulsi Devi is always recommended. So the ideal thing is if you can chant in front of a Tulsi plant, but at least if you have the Tulsi beads with you, you have her association. And you can meditate on how you are approaching the 108 chief gopis or the 108 Upanishads to enter into Krishna's service. However, beads are not the only traditional way to chant. There are other ways of counting one's chanting that are all within our tradition and done by our acharyas and by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself.
Mother Amal, I'd like to ask you a question, kind of a technical question, and I think there's probably better questions to ask, but I'll ask it anyway. I think it may fall into the category of kakatalya nyaya. But you were talking about how we, how through sound vibration we can untangle ourselves, because it was by creating sound vibration that we became entangled. Yes. And I was always sort of under the understanding that as soon as we desired to be separate from Krishna, just that desire, then the avaranatmika and prakshipatmika potency of maya sort of took over and we were in the material world. But as you were describing it, it sounded as if we had actually, you know, articulated a desire. So could you explain?
Well, that's how Srila Prabhupada describes it in this book. He says that our entanglement in material affairs has begun from material. Talking about our of course, that we made some, everything is created by sound materially. A desire is a form of sound. Even
okay,
material desire is
a
form of sound.
Okay, then that's the answer.
Yeah, ultimately everything is sound, even material or spiritual. Just like everything materially that we see, the desk in front of us, the walls, the chairs, our body, they're all different manifestations of sound. And that's all they are.
Yeah.
And the spiritual world is also a manifestation of sound. One is the sound of love and one is the sound of envy. It's the vibration. I really like it in the Krishna book where Prabhupada says the whole world is full of Krishna singing. You know, even the material scientists will say that everything is vibrating. And if there's vibration, there's sound. It may be a sound that just like I can't hear what a dog can hear.
Yeah.
You know, but it's all sound, which is why sound is the key. Changing the nature of sound.
Great
answer. That's not to negate the importance of our other services.
if I can, I'd like to ask one of the questions. I was also very affected with the description you gave about all the anarchas. I'm not sure how you phrased it, but by being inattentive, that you know, you measure yourself, or you're proud of your devotional activities, and you know, you're faithless and devious, you know, all those things, lazy. I say, oh my gosh, you're talking about me. The last time that I actually remember the like really intensely listening to every single mantra and really feeling something was when I was stuck in line for 5 hours at a DMV. Because I had, I was like really, really in ecstasy because I was taking, I was so careful to chant each mantra and hear every single mantra. So this is my fear. I mean, it may sound naive, but I need to ask. I fear that, you know, if I concentrate and spend as much time as I need to control my mind, I literally will be there all day. To chant 16 rounds would probably take me around 12, 14 hours.
Well, that was also my fear. I mean, when this sannyasi said to me that the way, he said, well, the way I started chanting was any time I didn't say one bead properly, I went back and said that bead again. I thought, oh my God, I can't do that. I have other things to do, and I'll be just chanting all day. So I have several answers for that. One is what we talked about last week. Take a day when you can chant all day. You know, find a day here and there, whether it's an ekadasi, whether it's a weekend, whether it's a festival, whatever, where that is literally all you do. And you don't worry if it takes you 10 hours to chant 16 rounds. You put aside the whole day for chanting. And, of course, what will happen? I mean, if you really make an effort at some time, it will start to go into your regular practice. Now, I've seen this sannyasi many, many times at the morning program, and believe me, it doesn't take him 14 hours to chant his japa. So it's like anything else. It's like this idea of rubbing the wood. And I've also experienced that if you're really hearing your japa and you're really chanting with the mind, that the japa often goes much faster. In fact, you lose track of time. And we find that many devotees who, you know, have really become meditative in their japa find it very easy to increase their number of rounds.
Wow.
Because they find that it's not taking that long to complete their japa. So that's, I see that these kind of fears, and this is one of many, many fears, are all the sort of things that the mind throws up at us to protect the false ego. You know, if I were to become attentive in my japa, I'd never have time to cook and eat, you know, uh-huh. And I would die. I wouldn't have time to pay the bills, and my house would be taken away by the bank, and I would be homeless, and nobody would love me anymore, and, you know, we basically have these, you know, I remember one devotee who was really struggling with a difficult relationship, and he said, you know, well, if I were to give up my gross lust, I wouldn't care about taking care of my relationships anymore. I'd become irresponsible. These are all the tricks of the mind, and the mind's very expert at this. It's been doing this for billions of lifetimes. That's its job, and if you just look at it and say, oh, that's the mind's job, it's just doing its job. Its job is to protect the false ego. That's the job of the mind. The job of the mind is to convince me that if I surrender to Krishna, it'll be too hard. I won't be able to do it, and so many terrible things will happen. And you just look at the mind and say, be quiet. I'm not fooled by you anymore. You know, you're not my friend. And here, let me give you something to do.
Yeah.
Mother Irmala?
Yes.
Well, one of the things that I do when I really want to go into a meditative state with my chanting is I have a set of earplugs that I put in my ears. And I got that from this one sannyasi that was in, visiting Vidagda, and I once forgot his name, Maharaj, I think. And he'd put earplugs in his ears, and he'd chant. So I tried it, and it's like, it just like the sound vibrates in your head, The mantra is vibrating, and there's just no way that you can think of anything else except that, because it's going on a three-dimensional level, kind of, you know.
Yeah, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends also that you can do things like that, that you can put on eye shades or earplugs, and we find that there many of the sadhus in our line would go into a cave. You know, if you go in the Vrindavan area, you'll see a number of the very secluded places, almost like a sensory deprivation chamber, that some of these persons went in to aid them in that kind of, basically in pratyadhara, in withdrawing their senses and their mind from external sense objects. Now, obviously, that's not something that we can always do all the time, every time we're chanting. Many people find it extremely helpful to do things. Some people don't, but many people do.
I heard a class once in Vrindavan, and the person giving the class said suggested that while chanting, you can think how pleasing Radha is to Krishna. And, you know, I took that back to where I was staying, and I didn't even try to image that. I was just thinking of the phrase, just the phrase, how pleasing Radha must be to Krishna. And I chanted some of the fastest rounds of my life, and I was on it. I mean, you just reminded me of that. And some of the best rounds I've chanted were very fast rounds. I mean, I was chanting so fast that I timed the round. And then I went down the hall to ask some of the older devotees there, is this possible? I think I just chanted a four-minute round.
Yeah. It is possible.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens. That is exactly what happens. So, of course, it may be that I think it's mostly just the mind putting up this thing that if I were to chant attentively, it would take me 14 hours. I really think that's just a trick of the mind. But even if you think so, okay, take one day and spend 14 hours and get good at it. But my experience is exactly the opposite, exactly what you're saying, Dr. That's my experience, that the times when my mind is running on the same track as my mouth, however it's doing it, whether it's that the mantra is running in my mind, whether I'm meditating on the meaning of the mantra, which is what you're describing, whether I'm envisioning the deity, whether I'm envisioning service to the deity, that doesn't really matter. But as long as my mind is running on the same track as my mantra, my japa becomes very fast. And it's like, whoa, how did I do that? Am I skipping beads? You know? And I'll pull out my beads and I'll watch my beads while I'm doing it. And I'm like, no, I'm chanting on every bead. And not only am I chanting on every bead, I'm saying every word in the mantra distinctly. And, you know, my whole japa time is done in an hour and 15 minutes. It's like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
So I've also had that experience many times. And I've talked to many devotees who say exactly the same thing. So I think it's a pretty clear phenomenon. But, you know, if in the beginning of becoming meditative one has to take 10 hours, then that's not a bad investment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
All right, thank you. Wonderful class, Mother Irmala. Thank you.
I wanted to thank the devotees, especially that were on free conferencing, because we had 32 to 34 devotees on. We could have only done this with devotees going on free conferencing. So thank you very much, Prabhu.
Ramananda Prabhu.
Yes.
Am I too late for a question for Irmala Mata?
She left.
Okay.
Usually.
All right. Anyways, a great class. It certainly was a fresh peek at the holy name, a real scientific peek. It was great.
Yeah.
When did you join us, Suresh G? When did you come in?
I was on most of the time, but I was kind of doing other things, but I caught most of it. I mean, it was very, Bhakti Vidya Vigyan Maharaj, he's a scientist. He's, you know, a master's in something, engineering, I think. And that was very interesting. Anyway.
Well, okay. Well, thank you, Prabhu, and hopefully we'll see everybody back soon tonight. If anybody wants to listen, we'll be discussing about Srila Prabhupada here in Hawaii. So let's tune in. Right. Thank you.
Thank you,
Ramana.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol.
All right.
Ramananda. Are you still there? Is there any plans for tomorrow, or is he traveling?
No, he's traveling. So
I think you still have it posted that there's a class on the website.
No, it won't be until June, actually.
So it's listed like that to come back?
I'll go check it out and make sure. Then. All right, thank you, Prabhu. All right, Vol.
Arrivo.